My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm a staff editor at IndieCorners.com, because it is a new week, well, it's a Tuesday, but it's a weekly show. From the other line is a man of too many titles, Mr. Tony East. Tony, what's up?
Being the man of too many titles. Just finished watching the Pacers somehow win their sixth game in a row.
He also was watching The Bachelor at the same time, so feel free to tweet him and make fun of him for that.
I was.
I don't know.
My favorite girl got kicked off.
Do you think there's an overlap of Pacers fans and Bachelor fans?
I know there's. I actually follow a guy who is a Hornets fan and Bachelor fan, and he tweeted at me, and he's like, "Rough night coming up for us." Yeah.
All right, fair enough. to things people really care about, though, I think we should probably start off by just discussing the Hornets game and. I would call it a dominating Pacers performance. They led by a bunch of, 20 at one point.
Now, you know, the third quarter, I think they played really well.
Yeah, they got I think they were up 20 in the first half, weren't they? Or close to it.
If you take out the third quarter, they gave up 57 in three quarters. Like, they played a fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it was another dominant defensive performance.
Yeah, they were. Really,
this team somehow has figured out, even without Oladipo, just to continue to be a top. I mean, they're the second rated defensive team right now in the league, but they continue to basically be one of the best defenses without him, essentially.
To vault the Thunder in defensive rating was impressive. Just in time for the Bucks to catch them, of course. But yeah, they are shutting down everybody. What's the most points they gave up this week? Was it the Pelicans at like 108?
I have got the schedule up real fast. Looks like it was the Pelicans at 107.
So the last six games, the most they've given up, they've only given up over 100 one time, right? The Pelicans.
And they're six wins, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. They're killing it on that end of the
floor. Yeah, I mean, really, if you look at the past. Go back to Memphis since the Vic. They've given up. They've had one bad, terrible defensive game, and that was against the Warriors.
No, the Warriors. That does not count to me.
I know. Well, I was about to say that.
When you guard them perfectly, they'll drop 120.
Yeah, it's the Warriors, so I don't know if that counts. And then the rest is 106, 107, 107. All three of those games they lost, it was really a lack of offense that was the reason they lost.
Not yeah.
Their defense was fine. You know, I wouldn't say it was fantastic or anything, but it was good enough to win if they had just put up more points.
Yeah, it's been awesome, and Like guys like Darren Collison are playing good defense all of a sudden. It's like they're doing everything well on the end of the floor. It's been awesome.
Yeah, if you look at – so I was just looking up defensive win share leader and stuff like that. And I got to pull up the tab again to figure out where I put it.
Turner has like a historically good block rate this year.
Yeah, so I did defensive rating.
Okay.
And people
are, defensive rating, worst stat, but okay.
Yeah, it's not a great stat. I agree with that. But it's I guess it's a barometer. It's not necessarily like the ranking matter, but it kind of shows who are the good defensive players in the league, I guess, or who the defensive team. The Pacers have – include Vic, I think four guys in the top 20. Thad, Oladipo, somehow Domas is in there, and then Turner.
Because he plays with one of the best bench defenses ever.
Yeah, I know. But like, I mean, I don't think that the defensive rating for say means much, but the fact that they have four guys in the best 20 defensive rating shows the team is really good at defense. I mean,
yeah,
he has two, I think, in that.
It's insane. Like they finally have figured out how to use Turner as like the perfect crutch to close out hard when they need to close out hard, and they jump the right passes. They're all good one-on-one defenders. Like, everyone improves on D when they get here. I think Nate Duncan, like, finally a national guy tweeted out, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, that kind of does happen. Like, the Dan Burke show is rolling on as everybody kills it on that end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, we agree, right? I mean, this team has had good defensive teams since, what, 2001?
Dan Burke, yeah, I don't know.
Since 99, give or take.
I might not have been alive the last time they were a bad defense.
I want to say Dan Burke was hired the first year Larry Bird was the head coach, all the way back in 98. Okay. It was that, or it was either the first year.
I'll Google him. You keep talking.
Is it that or the first year of Carlisle? I'd looked it up at one point, but essentially, if you look at what's happening right now, too, is making a really good case for Miles Turner to be defensive player of the year. I mean, you look at all the defensive stats, win shares, box plus minus, Turner ranks top five almost in all of them. I think he ranks six in win shares. Obviously, leads the lead in blocks, number one in block percentage. I mean, he's become what they wanted out of Roy Hibbert offensively in terms of being able to stretch the floor, but defensively even more versatile where he could like guard guards at times and not be a complete negative. And his timing on when he gets put on a guard and timing the block and all that stuff is just, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I think Turner's got to be, I mean, I want to say he's got to be defensive player of the year or number two right now.
Who's number one, PG?
See, I want to lean PG. Would Giannis? Could Giannis get it? Or is
Giannis way up there too? It's probably Gobert, Embiid, Turner, PG, Giannis, top five in some order.
Yeah, isn't Embiid? I don't know if Embiid. I mean,
oh yeah, I would put Embiid in there.
But how many of the? I mean, if you look at some of just like the
awesome.
The stats, though, I guess look at like defense. I mean, I guess rebounding. That's the one thing Turner lacks in rebounding, and that's where Embiid's got him a ton. But I don't know. I feel like Turner's having a better year than Embiid, where Embiid,
he might be this year. That's the top five. I'm not ranking
them. Yeah. Well, my thing with Embiid is I feel like Embiid is still a small liability on guards, where you get him switched onto a really good point guard or a shooting guard. He can be a liability
to an extent, though, you know?
Yeah. But Turner is not as much a liability. I feel like, I feel like against Kemba tonight, he got switched a couple times and made some. I mean, there was one time he goaltended a shot on him, but he was next place. Yeah. I mean, that's the difference, I think. And I mean, Gobert obviously was defensive player of the year last year, so he's awesome. But yeah. I think it's got to be PG, Turner, Gobert, and Giannis up there. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, that was where we, like, all summer, everyone was like, the yoga, you know, he's going to be nimble in the post and all this stuff. But, like, now he's, like, stretching out on people and stuff like that. And that's been so huge.
Could you imagine if PG and Turner play together? Oh, wait, they did.
Wow, that was unwarranted. Could you the imagine Danberg that? Answer, by the way, was the first Larry Bird year in 1998.
Wow, I got that right.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, he was like a Larry Bird guy, and he was the guy Larry Bird would fire a coach and say, well, we have Dan Brooks still, we're good, essentially.
Yeah, the Wikipedia, the greatest source in the world, has referenced his defense as top 10 defensive teams in the past five seasons. So they have ranked in the NBA's top 10 for defensive field goal percentage 13 times during the last 17 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I would go back. Almost every iteration of the Pacers where they've been good, like their top teams – their identity is defense. 03, 04, 05. Those teams were defense first.
I think the worst defensive team they had in my lifetime was the Dunleavy v. Troy Murphy.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, those 05 and 10, which is a wasteland of years. But like the 11, 12, 13, 14 team, all deep. It was defense identity. Like it's always this team's identity, which you could say the head coach they have, but really you look at it in like, there's one common factor with all those teams.
Manny B.
He's the only common factor with all those teams. It's kind of crazy. I guess Larry Bird at one point was the common factor.
Yeah, it's crazy how good they've been on that end. Like, it's hard to even say enough because, you know, I don't think anyone outside of people who work in basketball like understand defensive schemes. Maybe CC does, but like everyone else, we're just kind of like grasping at straws. But we can tell you that they allow a low amount of points, and that's very impressive. And
well, it's almost to a point where you just like expect them to hold the team under 100.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed the biggest difference when I was watching. What was I watching? I watched the Denver Philly game. That was Friday, right? When
that game went off in the fourth. The shootout.
Yeah, you realize like. Oh, right. Teams just trade back. Most of the good teams in this league, like the good offensive teams like Denver and Philly are two of the top offenses. They just trade baskets constantly. Like, they don't even worry about the defense. But the Pacers are like constantly on defense. It feels like they're like in the last 4 minutes, there might be four total points scored. And that's how they win the game versus like Philly and Denver just trading. I think it was like 100 at one point. They got away like 110, 115 each, something like that. Like,
yeah, Philly Lakers last night, 143 to 120.
Yeah, the Pacers don't let that happen. Right. I mean, what's the worst game is the Warriors game probably defensively they've had even all year.
That is what it is.
And that, I mean, right. Houston.
Worst of the year? No way. We have to be like, there's like one blip in the schedule, right?
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I'm thinking Charlotte was pretty bad. They gave 127.
The Charlotte game last year was pretty bad. What is
that? That was awful.
The Charlotte game, man. It's always the Charlotte game.
But I mean, besides, you look at that's pretty much the high. I mean, that's highest they've given up essentially. I mean, they gave up 116 to Chicago in overtime, but that was overtime. So
I want to check into this. We're going to get into
Boston 135. That was really
good. Yeah, the Celtics game. Yeah. That was no Turner, though. No Turner, though.
No, and they're playing a back-to-back and a three.
The Hawks giving up 121 is probably the worst.
But they beat the Hawks by like 10 that game, right?
129, 121. What a game.
Was that?
I didn't know the win-loss barometer was on here.
All right, that was the post-Christmas game. So
yes, the day after.
Yeah. But I mean, that again, look at most of the time, the score is between 95 and 105 almost every time.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry. I was reading something else.
I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but I would put it this way. If there is not I guess Oladipo was not going to be on it, but there's not one Pacer player on an all NBA defensive team, I think that's a sham.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I mean, should Thad be on one almost even?
Yeah. He's been probably the second best defender this year. Right. I'm thinking about that now. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, I would say normally be Oladipo and Turner, but I actually think that was better than Oladipo this year.
I agree. I 100% agree.
Oladipo had to take more of the offensive load, and you could feel it on the defensive end at times.
Yeah, Thad is awesome on D. I mean, what does Thad do wrong in a game? Like, now that he can shoot threes all of a sudden, what does Thad do wrong?
Trying to think. I mean, sometimes those wild, like he's trying to put the ball on the ground and do too much. That's probably
the pound it, the pound it from the elbow floater that they teach in high school these days.
Yeah, or that's sometimes he'll like, and it's not a lot, but he'll frustratingly miss like six layups in a game.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, they lost a game where that happened.
But the thing is, now he's become so good at tipping the ball back and then he'll miss that layup, get back the rebound, and push it into the hoop. So
yeah, I mean, this gets said like every broadcast now, but he's shooting 43% from three since December 1st. Like, how? How? Where? How did this happen?
I mean, he just got confident. You can see it. He just is like, he just takes the shot.
Where did this come from?
I mean, there was one where he took kind of a contested three. I don't think he made it, but he just, instead of being like, the biggest thing I feel like with bad 3-point shooters, they just don't take them and they're like afraid to and they get in their own head. That just because the moment he takes it, he has a shot, he takes it. He'll pump out of it a little more than you want him to, but most of the time he has an open three, he just takes it and lets it ride. And he doesn't have a bad form. So like it should go in if he's open, you know, at a 35 to 40% rate, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, speaking of solid 3-point shooters though, I mean, I think we should transition to talk about Bojan because he has been.
You're producing this one. Can you insert the Bojan Victor Oladipo one?
I don't know what timestamp it is. This is going to involve too much editing on my part. It records at 10:30 Eastern. So
Bojan!
There it is. We got it.
Sorry.
So he's playing so well that is he
conference elevating? Player of the week? That's crazy.
I feel like he's elevating himself to a level that is going to result in a very, very stupid contract.
He's going to price himself out of the Pacers. I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I'm not price out of because they'll probably bring him back, but I'm afraid like he's going towards like 2 years, 36 or 3 years.
He's 50. Almost at 17 points a game.
Yeah. I mean, he's averaging 20.
That's a lot. That's a, like people really diminish that. That's a lot of points.
In the last 10 games, he's averaging 20.4 points on 50, 40, 87 shooting.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's a 10
game. He averaged 23 game last week. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. I think the question is, will defenses start to pick up that he's the number one option now and like,
start
throwing everything at him? Because right now he's, I feel like, was it the Cavs game or what was it the one before? Did they play before the Cavs? The Pelicans, I'm thinking the Pelicans game where he just like slipped under a bunch of maybe it's Clippers. I don't remember which one, but he slipped under a bunch of dudes and got a bunch of easy layups. It felt like he was just getting these, like, easy under the hoop basket. Nobody was trying to defend him up close. And now if teams start really trying to focus on him defensively, they might slow him down.
If that screen, the screener play, they were on the first play of the game works every game. He's going to start with two every time.
But I mean, getting six is fine. It's getting the 29 or 24 or 31.
The Sans Vic Bojan era is 21.1 points on 51, 42, 89. That's crazy. That is insane.
The question is how does this translate?
That's like a $15 million player, which, oh man, I am not happy about that.
Well, but so first of all, he's going to be 30. That's the biggest thing going against his long-term contract. They're not going to, he might not get a big deal, but
years, not dollars. I'm cool with paying him a lot if it's only like 2 years.
So my thought is should he be the leader of a bench unit offense? Like, should he right? Should that be the next, like, if he's brought back, should that be the thought? Like, oh, we'll just put him with Kojo and Sabonis if he's still here, which we can talk about later. But kind of thing, and just say that's our bench unit, and then and he'll still play 30 minutes, but you try to bring in whoever else to play in the starting lineup and just let that be it. Cause I feel like he deserves the option to be like the go to guy was for a solid 10 or 15.
Pry some better wing from a team that is trying to do a salary dump to sign a star. I'm not naming names, but I kind of just named a name. And then
give me a name. Come on, Tony. Give me the name.
I've got two for you, but
give me two names. Come on, do it.
Gallinari and Josh Richardson.
Okay.
And then you re-sign Bojan to be your bench guy. I think that would be sweet.
And if you could get him at 15 for 2 years.
Step one, offer Klay Thompson the key to the city and
oh yeah.
And then when he says no, then go to step two.
Right, could you get Bojan for 15 a year? 2 years, 15? Is that reasonable?
2 for 30. Like if you go 3 for 45, I'm going, that's gonna be a lot by the end, but like two for 30.
I would do 3 for 45 as a team option the third year.
Yeah, okay, I could do that.
Or like you give him, and maybe it's like a buyout. It's like a $2 million buyout.
Yeah, you know what, Bojan? If you're still this awesome at 33, you've earned $15 million.
Yeah, I mean, remember he hasn't played in the NBA that long. I do wonder if that's going to help his body.
I know. Well, I feel like he gets beat up every game. He just pops right up. Like he got drilled in the nose.
He's not like he's a well built person. Like he's not like some thin. Like he's big.
He has missed. And one of them could be because he got traded and like the schedules didn't line up, but he has missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 games total in his career.
Right? He missed two games last year, or one game.
Two. And one of them was because they arrested him last
game. Yeah, I remember that. There was one game he was precautionary taken out. I remember it was for something.
Oh, he didn't start a game for Brooklyn. That's weird. But in 2016-17, he played 81, but like he got traded. So I wonder if the Wizards just were like ahead, you know, in games.
Yeah.
So it could even be less than that.
No,
that's
crazy. He's
Iron Man to the most extreme.
He's durable, and the way he's playing right now, I mean, he's the best offensive player on the third best team in the East currently.
I went to check if he missed a game in that season he got traded. Guess who he missed a game against?
The Pacers.
The Pacers.
Okay. Was it because of the trade that the game he missed?
It was early February, so maybe.
So probably. It probably was.
That's funny. They started Randy Foy in his place. How far the league has come since then. This durable, this efficient, this good at scoring, like that's a $15 million player if he keeps it up the rest of the season. He's been so good. And I never expected him to be the guy to carry the offense. You know, I thought it'd be more of a team approach, but they have a first option. That's so crazy.
Oh, I thought it would sure be through Turner and Tyreek, and they've just – Me too. I mean, should we be surprised that Tyreek's best game was the game they brought Wes Matthews to replace him, essentially?
Well, no, I don't think that necessarily – I mean, that could be some of it. But I think he just fits so much better with the bench than the starters that, you know, he's able to thrive more with Sabonis as a screener and, you know, the right guys playing defense around him and the spacing McDermott and leave for 5 minutes, give him – you know, I think he's better at that. Like Nate said after the game, we like when Tyreek is this – like, we told him his role would be this guy off the bench, and then look at that. He's good at it.
Is he that good at it, though? I think we
should talk about Christmas, man. Since Christmas. Since Christmas.
Okay. All right. That's fine. But he also missed, six games of that, too.
Oh, yeah. He sucked. He sucked before Christmas. Like, obviously, we have to approach, like, sparingly. I had a word right there, and I just lost it and chose sparingly. Approach with caution.
Yeah, caution is what we're looking for.
Approach with caution, but he was really good after Christmas until he hurt his back in that car crash. So, you know, if he can get back to that right after PRP form, like that'd be awesome for the bench too.
Yeah. So
someone brought that up in our Slack chat. Like, do you think he's mad? I said, no, because when they signed him, they probably told him, you know, your role is off the bench. I mean, you'll play with Vic sometimes, but it's off the bench. And then Nate said after the game, we signed Tyreek to play this role off the bench. Like, I think they've ingrained it in his head that this is his role. But at the same time, I get where he could be like, ugh, this guy just got here and he's already starting. But he played good, so that's all I care about.
Yeah, Tyreek's biggest problem, too, is that he's probably not coming back here. I mean, not losing the money he's making right now.
No way.
And so he's probably trying to figure out, okay, what level do I need to play at to get a contract for a decent money next summer?
Be impactful. You know how you do that?
No, go 4 of 7 and then be a plus +9.
That's perfect. Great. I loved it. He was fun. He was a fun 4 of 7, too, you know, besides
that. Yeah, he had some really nice plays going. I mean, going to the rim and just.
Good passes to Sabonis.
Yeah. He looked very engaged. Maybe that would put
it. He's good. He's a good defensive player all the time. I stand by that. I know no one else will be with me on that, but I think he's a good defensive player all the time.
The problem is there aren't enough good defensive stats to like just point to a guy being good or bad at defense. And so the team as a whole is good at defense. And the only bad defender I really think on the team is McDermott. Everybody else is,
Bojan too.
Well, Bojan is actually
below
average, but like McDermott is bad. And Leap is bad too, but he's not really playing in the rotation as much as everybody else. But I don't really count him yet.
What do you think the Hawks bench guard shot from the field tonight? Or the Hornets, excuse me.
Hornets bench guard. Ooh.
Hornets bench guard tonight shot. Don't look. Guess.
Oh, okay. Well, I just pulled the bar score.
0-5.
Yeah, that's 0-5.
Kojo and Tyreek swarming.
The question is, though, is that just Shelvin Mack and Malik Monk as terrible NBA players?
Malik Monk is good.
And Malik Monk, Shelvin Mack is a journeyman, right?
I don't know why I'm such a Malik Monk fan. Like, he's done nothing to make me.
I don't know what he's done. What's he averaging on the Aaron Pulpus? Let's see.
Him and Luke Kennard back-to-back picks makes me happy. I love both those.
Yeah, ones. All was he picked right? Both got picked right before Donovan Mitchell, right?
Yeah, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah, all 10.4 and 2 and 2 of Malik Monk is really great.
That's a good sophomore. Come on.
He's shooting 39-34 is not terrible.
People really devalue. I'm not saying you do this a lot, but like people really devalue the importance of role players. Like,
100%.
7 of the 10 teams on your title team are role players.
No, the biggest problem.
Probably 8, really.
No, and I mean, you're saying the Pacers were like having 8 solid role players can win you, 35 games in the league now or 40 games because everybody else is tanking half the time.
It's like, oh, you can't trade for this guy. That'd be stupid. He's just a role player. I'm like, yeah, that's great.
Well, okay. So that, I mean, you want to take a break and then we get into our argument?
Oh, I don't know how that's a good segue, but sure.
Well, because you're probably a role player. So we'll take a break. We'll talk about a role player the Pacers signed in our probably biggest dispute so far. All right, Tony. So you talked about role players. The Pacers signed a role player. I disagree with them signing, and not because I don't think he's a good player, because he helps his team win now, whatever. I mean, I think he does all those things. It's Wes Matthews, obviously, if I kind of bury the lead there. But my biggest gripe with it is that it ultimately hurts Aaron Holiday and Edmund Sumner. And I feel like this team was doing fine without Wes Matthews, and they were doing, they had found the right balance of, okay, we can develop our young guys and still win games. And I feel like Wes Matthews is just kind of like this, okay, we want to be the 3 seed and win a playoff series and get 4 home playoff games and make the money from it, versus like, we want to develop Aaron Holiday into the starting point guard he needs to be for our team in the future.
When you throw out conspiracy theories, you sound a lot of...
It's not a conspiracy theory.
I think the Pacers were winning in spite of those two, not with those two. Holiday was winning 32.4% since Vic went out.
Balance. I said they had found the right balance.
No, they had it. They just had to play it because they didn't have anybody else.
I mean, I agree they need to play Sumner, but
Sumner was worse.
Holiday, in my opinion, just needs to play because he needs to play through his mistakes.
I think he's obviously not that bad of a shooter. I think, development is important to me, but like the human element here, you can't just bench dudes for like young guys. Like, you just can't. No, they come to the NBA to win a championship. You have to let people who are in the 3 seed try to win the championship. And I don't think 20 games of Aaron Holiday are going to be like so massive for him to be some like we're not going to look back in 3 years and be like, well, if Aaron Holiday played the rest of his rookie year, we'd be so much farther along on the timeline.
Okay, we have to remember two things. Aaron Holiday,
because you're talking about the long game, I'll think of a long game here.
Aaron Holiday is 22 years old. He's not 19-year-old team relief. Where
don't draft old guys.
Because I mean, let's see. Mitchell played 2 years of college. Lillard played 3 years of college. I mean, there are a lot of guys who played plenty of years in college who turned out good.
And those guys were lottery picks.
Well, I'm just saying that those are examples. Draymond played 4 years of college. So you can, there are plenty.
Outlier.
There are plenty of outliers to the example. So it's not taking the old guy is not the wrong way to look at it.
We can pick the outliers because they're the good story.
The way to look at it is you pick the 22-year-old. He is physically developed enough to play in the league. That's the biggest thing you can take from that, is that he is
allegedly.
He looks the part physically. I mean, Leaf did not look the part last year. Holiday does. He has the speed. He has the length. He doesn't look like he's just some tiny. I mean, he's short, so he looks small. But isn't like a complete just like, oh, why is the 18-year-old playing with the men? Basically, he doesn't look that way. And so, but also you have to develop those guys faster, because obviously by 23, 24,
isn't he older than Turner or close to that?
Holiday is the same age as Turner, roughly. They're both born in 96.
Yeah.
Same with Sabonis. And so the thing with Holiday is that he just needs to play. He needs to figure out, this is how I succeed and this is how I don't. And he only learned that. Yeah, you learn that from coaching a little bit too, but you learn that by playing. You know, Holiday has those strengths where he has his ability and his handle with his length to create space. I mean, it's obvious. That's what he kind of can do. But he's got to learn when to take that 25-foot three and not take it, and kind of things like that. And my biggest thing was, you bring in Matthews and you just kind of like, and I get why you bring in Matthews, because he's such a big upgrade over Tyreek. And that's a huge thing, because Tyreek has been pretty bad till recently. You needed that you needed that guy in the starting lineup to kind of solidify it. But you also need Holiday to develop to be good in the year, 2019, 2020, 2021.
I think if the Pacers thought that playing Holiday in these 20s games would make him so much better in 2021,
I think they didn't care,
then they would do it. But they don't think it'll make him substantially better.
No, but how valuable is it for a rookie to play in the playoffs? It's hugely valuable. Ask Turner probably about his first playoff series. What was it, the 7 game against the that was his first playoff series against the Raptors? I think it was his first playoff series, if I remember right.
I have his B-bar.
Yeah, that is, because he's been 4 years. Lazy. He's played Raptors, then he played Cavs, then he played Cavs twice. So, yeah. And I bet Turner, that first playoff series was huge for Turner in his development. I mean,
because Paul George. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, yes. I mean, but I mean,
the injury. Okay, I'm caught up.
Okay, you good now? You there?
I'm all right.
Remember, I nailed the year Dan Burke was a coach. So
you're on fire with the history
today. I'm nailing. No, but I think him. You know, the question will be, one, is Tyreek going to stay healthy the rest of the year? And that's a huge if. And that could be where Holiday comes in. You know, Tyreek gets hurt, or they just decide we're sick of, you know, he's not playing well. Whatever, we want to play Holiday. I just think Holiday playing in the playoffs would be huge for him, just because it's like you're learning how to be an NBA player by playing in these big moments against good teams and all that stuff. And it's disappointing that they're one, going with Leaf over Holiday when Leaf clearly is fine, but he has limited potential is the right way to put it. It's the nice way to put it, where Holiday has a potential to be a starting point guard probably if everything goes right, where I feel like they need to play Holiday. I'm not saying they need to play him 30 minutes a night. Maybe you're
way higher on Holiday than me. That could be a lot of this too.
You're what? What do you say?
Maybe you're just way higher on Holiday than me too.
You know, I'm not. So I like once the trade deadline passed, I just kind of went through and watched a bunch of Holiday's shooting clips on NBA Stats to kind of see like, okay, how's this guy scoring? Why is he missing shots? If you watch him,
he pulls up in the elbow like six times a game.
Yeah, that's his biggest problem is he just takes these 25-foot threes when he's wide open. He just does.
And that's not a problem.
No, but that's his biggest, like, that's why he's been so, like, his 2-for-8 game is because he takes 5 threes and misses from 25 feet. And he's just got to figure out, you know,
he's shooting better from 3 than from 2.
I understand. I was getting to a second problem is that he has not figured out that his biggest strength is that he has this length and handle to create space, where instead he just wants to use and bully his way to the rim like he did in college, which he can't do anymore because he's not as big as anybody, and the centers are just destroying him at the rim half the time. And so he's got to figure that out, but I think he figures it out by playing, not by sitting on the bench and watching other guys.
That's the same with every player ever.
And if Holiday can figure it out and he can use his handle and he could be, first of all, he could be a great 2 off guard to Oladipo at times. I mean, you could see it. He could be great if he could just sit in 3-pointer, become 35% of that and become kind of the, and at times his own kind of creator. I mean, he has that ability. Just him not playing 20 games, you might say, isn't important now. But if he had played these 20 games, you might have learned, okay, this guy can be the 8th guy in rotation next year versus like throwing him in again. And maybe he is the 8th guy next year and won't matter. But like, if the goal is him to be your starting point guard someday, you might be delaying that. And that slowly, maybe that's what you want to do. Maybe you feel like next year you want to make Joseph the starting point guard and you want to wait another year for Holiday, and it's fine. But the Wes Matthews signing,
I don't think this changes the timeline of Aaron Holiday.
I think it delays it a little bit. I think it does.
I don't. Okay. I really don't.
And I mean, that's fine. We can disagree on that. I get why you went to get Wes Matthews. In a vacuum, Wes Matthews helps you win games and keep that 3 seed. And he clearly proved his value tonight. I mean, he made some great passes. He wasn't a great shooter tonight, but he'll figure it out. And you can tell with Matthews too, being with a good coach and Rick Collar before, he just kind of knows how to be in a system. Like, he doesn't do stupid things. You know, he isn't like trying to over impress everybody else, but it seems like really you should be playing Holiday over Tyreek at some point is maybe the move, I guess.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Right. Cause Matthews is an upgrade over Tyreek, right? I mean, we can both agree on that.
Huh?
Matthews is an upgrade over Tyreek.
Yes.
And so maybe they should have traded Tyreek, honestly, just to give great room to let Holiday play.
No, still no. Hey, all right, our second best free agent signing of all time. See ya, buddy. Have fun on a losing team.
That's not saying much. You're just saying like,
he did a lot though. Like,
what do you mean? He was like,
he chose here. He literally chose here.
He chose here because we offered him the most money. Everybody else offered him 12. We offered him 14. Whatever.
He's making 12.
Well, everybody offered him 10. We offered him 12. Whatever the difference was, it was $2 million more than everybody else was offering. I forget
tax, not the get Tyreek tax.
No, but a little bit of that is like, oh, you're offering more money than everybody else. Okay, I'll go to you. I mean, Tyreek's a tier, three free agent, free agent?
Close to tier B this summer. That's why I think it's such a big signing.
I don't know. You don't remember all guys who are free agents.
It's easy to be revisionist because he sucked. Like, I'm revisionist with him sometimes too, but I feel like he was pretty close to tier B. Like, people were pumped about that. Like, even non-Pacers people were like, damn, the Pacers got Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, I think that's also the hype of free agency when, all the big names, except for LeBron, were off the market, essentially. And plus, you can't look at free agency as that big a deal because none of the good players go to free agency anymore. Think about it.
That's true. They just go where they want and then sign.
They go, what did Jalen Rose call it? He calls it pre-free agency. I mean, they just go a year early. They go wherever they want a year early, and that's what happens. So, I mean,
yeah.
I get that he was – I mean, if you traded him, would you have been mad if they traded him? I mean, would you have been, like, throwing your hands up, like, oh, I'm pissed the Pacers.
It depends what they get back.
If they had gotten a second-round pick and a young player of – I don't know.
That would have been a hell of a lot for Tyreek. So, yeah. Chance they could have got that for him, though.
Let's say they would have got him for just a second-round pick.
Maybe.
I don't know how you do it because you can't salary so much. You can't just dump it on somebody.
The Kings throw you a second for him because he won Rookie of the Year there. That would have been the only way.
They throw you a second and they give you some
salary. No, they didn't need salary filler. That's why I chose them.
Oh, okay. I thought they only had like 6 or 7 in space, not 12.
Now they do. They had a lot before they took in Barnes.
Oh, okay.
for the good old Zebo Jackson.
I don't know. I mean, I just feel like the Wes Matthews signing is fine and it helps you win this year, but it does make me scratch my head long term of like what are they going for long term? Do they really care about?
I think it maybe loses you like one win long term.
Well, no, not the win. It's the playing holiday. It's developing Aaron.
Yeah, I think the development might cost you like one win long term. 20, it's 20 games.
Yeah, but that's 20 more games than any other rookie could get to play.
So what do you think the record would be changing in those 20 games in the future? Like,
well, first of all, Tony, there are 24 games left. So let's get that exactly straight. 25 okay, include tonight. 25 games. So that is almost a third of the season.
Okay. 20 is a fourth of the season.
So let's, I mean, I would say they probably
the difference between a third and a fourth of the season is 7 games.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. A third. Yeah, you're right. Whatever. It's a third of the season. But what I would say is that they're probably still going to lose the same game they lose anyways. They're still going to lose to all the good teams. I mean, being a pessimist, I mean, it's going to be hard to still beat Milwaukee. It's going to be hard to beat Philly, Denver twice, Golden State again.
Brown, obviously, like, it's going to look stupid to do anything except start him and start.
No, but being the 3 seed is still going to be hard to get. Everybody. You're still probably going to be the 4-5 game. You're still going to lose in the first round. But now you played Wes Matthews for 25 games instead of playing on holiday, and you played a guy who's not resigning most likely and who is definitely just there because he's helping you win now when when you could play holiday, have the same results, beat the 5 seed, lose in the first round of the playoffs still, and be fine. And having
you'll be fine either way.
No, you're not, because you ultimately have lost. 20
games of Aaron Holiday are really important to you.
Yes, 25 games are important developing players. Every game is important developing a player. It is 100%.
I agree, but I don't think it's like such a huge deal. These
no, but it really doesn't make that much sense.
Like 200 minutes, these like 200 minutes of rookie minutes, I don't think are that important. Like most rookies don't play a lot in their rookie year.
Yeah, but Holiday probably could play, so why should he be playing?
No, he didn't. He shot 32% from the field.
But he played probably what? He's played how many games? 30? I've got to pull up his stats.
Yeah, I don't have it.
The exact amount of games he's played.
I was tired of talking about it, so I closed.
So he's played 37 games. He's shot 38 and 30. But he probably had what, 10 or 12 solid games, give or take.
Yeah. So a third of them. So 7 of those 25.
Yeah. Why not let him keep playing? I just don't get why you're like just saying, oh yeah, sorry, we're not going to play anymore. We brought in a guy who's not going to be the long term, but
because you're good.
But they're basically saying to Holiday,
teams don't play rookies.
But they're not that good. They're good in the sense that they were
on a 6-game win streak.
They're good in the sense that they had Oladipo and were like a legit contender to win the East. They lost Oladipo. They all of a sudden fell into that tier. Realistically, they're in the tier of Orlando, Brooklyn, Miami, Detroit, right? That's the tier they're really in right now.
They're better than all that.
They played Brooklyn in a 7-game series, they would win 4-2, right? That's probably fair.
4-1, 4-2. Yeah.
I would say 4-2. I mean, that's my guess top of my head. So they're not that much better, and they're definitely not in that top tier. So you have to look at it that way. They're like a decent team who should be developing the young guys. They could be good next year.
They can still be good next year.
Well, when Aaron Holiday is done to development after, I think it's a poor sign to a young player who is really the one you're trying to impress. You're not.
How did all the other good players who didn't play their rookie year have their development stunted?
Well, they took him an extra year. You're going.
Okay. If that's what it takes when you have a really
good team. Yeah, but next year might be their peak year. Then next year might be the Pacers' like peak opportunity to win the East.
No way.
It might be. I mean,
23, and 26 for their best three players? No way.
27 for Oladipo.
No, he's 26 right now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to be 27 in May.
I'm an idiot.
No, his birthday.
No, he's not. He's going to be 26 in May.
No, he was born May 7th, 92, man.
You're right. Damn. Okay, 27, 23 is still
Tony, not the peak. I have been on fire with my
these
dates.
These dates are killing me.
I don't know because it's 2 days after my birthday, so that's why I know his birthday.
Yeah, 2 days after my sister's birthday also.
Oh, nice.
Year, too.
Next year might be their best opportunity to win based on where every other team in the East is. Where if they bring back Thad, they bring back Bojan, they got Turner. And they add Oladipo, and they add another guy that might be at the right where all the role players are at the right level, just good enough still to be like
next year's their window. You think Holiday can help them a lot next year? You think second year Aaron Holiday is going to help them out so much?
I think he could have boosted his trade value enough to get him a good player. Now you're kind of just sitting on this guy. Well, he was kind of good for for 10 of the games. We don't know.
Trade value really worth going down since he started playing.
I don't know if trade value has really gone down. I think teams of Washington said this guy.
Yeah, most teams like guys who shoot 32%.
I think most teams like guys who look like they have a lot of potential and can do a lot of.
I have not seen that. So
I think right now you're at this kind of like, oh, okay, well, yeah, well, you guys didn't trust me to play him. So maybe you guys don't think he's very good. Why are you trying to trade him kind of thing? I mean, he put up 17 points 4 games ago. How many rookies do that?
What about the other 7 games?
But how many rookies can do that?
Trae Young, Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin
Beck. But how many of those guys are taking 15, 20 shots a game? He took 10. He shot 7 of 10. Against the best team in the NBA. Or not, against the Lakers, Sorry, I was thinking of the Warriors. I had the Warriors. He played well against the Warriors, too. He shot 4 of 8 for 12.
The Lakers. Not the 28-29 Lakers.
Not the best team in the NBA. I'm sorry. The Warriors game you played well against, too. But
everybody played amazing in that Lakers game. He played really well in that game.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I just feel like he needs to play minutes, and what's going to happen here is Tyrese's going to get hurt, and he's going to play the next 25 games, and it's going to be both the best of both worlds here. But I just think he needs to play. Is all.
Yeah,
I think we should.
No, I'm not mad about it. I would, if he could play, that'd be.
I'm just confused. Maybe mad is my word. I'm just kind of confused that, like, great, you brought in Wes Matthews, and he's a good player, but what is? Is he going to bring him back next year? Is that the plan? I mean, then that makes sense to me. You know?
No chance.
Why not? I don't know. We'll see. You never know. Right?
You're spending another cap space bucket to sign a Wes Matthews.
You can't say never, because what if Bogdan leaves? Then you kind of might want to bring him back.
Yeah.
You can't say never. Let's put it that way. But we should probably move on from this and preview the one game left this week. All right, Tony. We are just days away from the All-Star break. One game this week.
Yes.
Against the Are they the best record in the NBA or second best?
They do have the best record in the NBA.
Against the best team in the NBA currently. You got their ratings up?
Ooh, crap, no.
Oh, well, I do. So they're first in defense at 104. Nice. They're 0.6 ahead of the Pacers, and they have a 113.4 offensive rating, which ranks fourth in the NBA. They are 41-14 with actually expected win loss of 42-13.
They're crazy good.
Yeah, they're averaging the second most points per game while only getting up the seventh most points per game. They run the fifth best pace in the league. Some other random stats. I'm going to pull up where they rank in 3-point shooting. If I can find the 3-point attempts. So they rank second in 3-point attempts per game, probably behind the Rockets, if I had to guess, top of my head, at 37.5 per game, which is ridiculous. Last year, I think they were in the bottom five, if I remember right. They're first in total rebounds, first in defensive rebounds, first in 2-point percentage, second in field goal percentage. I mean, they're just, it's a really good team.
Yeah, they're insane. And the fact that the Pacers beat them by so much at home was insane.
They've literally found, like, they've taken the Rockets method and just built it around a player who is, like, an extremely efficient player on the rim.
Oh, yeah. They just have, like, the perfect players around Giannis.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is everything LeBron could have dreamed of.
Anthony Davis was talking about going there, like they're on destination lists now because they have an insane player and a clearly very smart front office and a great coach.
Right. You agree. This is everything LeBron could have dreamed of in a team.
I can't imagine. You know what we should have done, Adam, is talked about the Pacers getting Mike Budenholzer this summer. Oh, wait, we did that.
Tony's not bitter at all.
He was right there. He got fired. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. They are just sick. Like, they have two all-stars, borderline three, because Bledsoe has been so good this year. Brook Lopez gives them, like, everything they need. His three-pointers have been falling. His rebounds have been awesome for them. They just got Mirotić, who might make his debut in this game.
I'm guessing not. He has a calf.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I forgot he's hurt. Never mind.
I'm guessing those key matches after the all-star break. It just makes sense.
You're right. That makes a lot of sense. Malcolm Brogdon, I want to check what he's at now, actually. Malcolm Brogdon is 113 for 120 at the free throw line this year.
Hey, another guy on my fantasy team.
He's a wildly good free throw shooter. And then their bench is full of good guys who are skilled in certain areas, like George Hill. Well, not as much now, but like, you guys know what he can do on D. You know, Brogdon,
the sneaky 50-40-90 club.
Sneaky, efficient guy. That's what I was about to say. Thank you. Ilyasova is really struggling, but he can take charges and hit the three. Snell can hit the three. DiVincenzo's a little ball of energy. Like, they got stuff everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we have Mirotić, their top six, and maybe put George Hill at seven. They're good. They're really good with their top seven. I mean,
and Giannis only plays like 33 minutes a game. Like, he's not even playing that.
Can you imagine the Plaid's going to play 38?
Oh, yeah. They're I mean, I think I might put him as my favorite in these.
Really, yeah, I'm just concerned that that one of the good defensive coaches in the East will figure out how to game plan it for Giannis for seven games and figure out how to make him kind of.
They got struggle. The Bucks at seven last year with crappy Bledsoe and no Lopez.
Well, yeah, that also worked. What if Bledsoe just falls off the cliff again?
That's true. Terry Rozier embarrasses him.
I just feel like the thing is, coaches will figure out how to scheme to Giannis in this offense, and is there too much of a flaw in his ability to shoot the three to kind of like to win four, seven games against a really good team? That's my only thought. But
yeah,
we'll find out. I mean, that's why you play the games, right?
Yeah,
because LeBron, probably talking about LeBron, and LeBron just destroyed teams.
He does. Yeah, I saw a tweet that made me sad. It's like, imagine the storybook Nuggets season ends with them playing LeBron in the first round.
Oh, I mean, LeBron's on autopilot right now, and when he turns it on, it might just be done. I mean, I'm might glad go.
The Pacers are done playing him.
He might go full Bojan, the way he played Bojan those last three games, just backing him down constantly and just going for 45 and 48 minutes. I mean, I could see that.
Back to the Bucks.
Yeah, sorry. Back to the Bucks.
What made the last game so special, winning, as Thad Young was amazing on both ends of the floor. And he attributed, well, obviously both of our butchers are Giannis, so I'm going to zoom in on him.
Yeah, that's good to say.
But yeah, I wanted to find a way to say the attributed, but that's wrong. Thad attributed how he was able to guard him so well, as just like being able to stay in front of him one-on-one the whole time so no one has to help. In that way, like, even if Giannis does get his shots up, no one else will be able to get an open look. But he also limited Giannis. I think he took like 8 shots in that game or something crazy. So if Thad can play that good of D again, I think they have a really good chance to win.
I would agree with you 100% on that. I mean,
obviously, like, shut down the star, you win.
So what I remember most from that game is that Oladipo didn't really play that well, and it didn't feel like he had that big of, I mean, granted, they won by a ton, so it didn't matter. But it felt like that he was kind of just like a side player in the game, almost, in a sense, where like it was kind of like, oh, Thad is playing amazing and Turner's playing really well, and Oladipo's kind of just helping out. Where it gives you hope because you feel like, you know, West Memphis could be that kind of guy. Oh, he's just helping out while Turner and Thad kill it. And so maybe that's kind of the recipe to beating the Bucks. I don't know. It's kind of game where I'll have to see them.
I don't think anyone figured out that recipe quite yet.
And I have to see it to believe it. But they are playing them at home, which is a huge plus. Yep. I mean, the Pacers are really good at home.
The only loss to the Bucks they had was because it was the new stadium opening for them.
Yeah, and I think they're now 22-7 at home, right? The Pacers are.
My goodness. Yeah, I mean, they're 23 now because they clinched the winning record. Oh, no, you're right. I'm sorry, 22.
God, you're just not – the stats is not your day today, man.
I'm just going to defer to you. Tomorrow's lottery number's coming up on this podcast.
Pacers are a really good home team, and that's also why them being a 3 seed – well, even being a 4 seed is probably really valuable in playoffs because they're a good home team. The crowd has been really good this year and all that stuff. I mean – the crowd is finally getting its credit for the way it's treated what the past two games they've been featured on Bleacher Report for making fun of Brandon Ingram,
JaVale
McGee, and who was the last guy they made fun of? Was the Cavs
the
player?
Cavs, they did the Zion chant against the Cavs.
Yeah, that's right. When Steph's too much shooting, I think free throws.
I forget the Clippers one. I didn't think that one was as funny.
Yeah, but those two I saw made it on like Bleacher Report and stuff like that.
They've had some good ones here.
But yeah, I mean, there's a different team at home. I mean, I don't know their splits defensively at home. I have them up currently, so I can look at that real fast. Yeah. At home, they are giving up. I'm not
you had it. This.
I'm not going to be cool enough at this to figure this out.
It was right there for you. I'll get it.
They average 4 more rebounds a game at home, which is a plus, huge plus. They average an extra block game per home at home, things like that. They're just a better. They're just. There's a really good home team. I don't have the opponent's points per game.
Where would we be without that block? All right, at home they give up 98.9 per game. On the road, they give up 107.3.
Yeah, so that's the difference, man. Right there. That's that one block. That one block per game, and those 4 rebounds. Those 4 rebounds are probably because of missed shots.
Yeah. No, the rebounds are the same home and away. 42.7.
I have 45.6 and 41.1.
I do not have that. I don't have this game that they just played included.
I have the game they just played. That's why.
Well, something crazy happened. Somehow they're – no, that can't – it's still wrong. Something is still wrong here.
Somebody's wrong, yeah, because NBA stats has 45.6 rebounds in 29 home games and 41.4 in 28 road games.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's not worry about it. It's not worth it. Not worth it right now. But yeah, they're a much the key point here is they're a much better defensive team at home, which plays to Thad, who is like, I feel like has become, like I said, he should be a second team all defensive player of the year because he is like their defensive stopper. I mean, he's their forward stopper at home.
Yeah, every team needs that guy who can shut down elite wings. You know, that's if you want to have a gripe with Bogey, it's that he can't do that. But Thad can, and he can do it very well. Kalen wrote a great piece about it last year. Man, I just called her Kalen. Kalen Cooper, who needs a
called her Kalen, called her CC.
Called her CC. Tom got me calling her CC. I feel bad. I do not have any nickname or first name basis with her. But anyway, she wrote a great piece about Thad defending Giannis last year, which was really good. And he obviously guards LeBron at least pretty well. You know, they need that guy, and this is a game to have him. This is the game to have him.
So is Thad your X factor?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I think Turner is mine. He had 23
last time. Yeah, I was going to say, you could argue a lot of the starters, but.
He had 23 last time. I think he's the. Really? Yeah, he had a really good game last time. I had this set up. I had it up for a second. So, yeah, Turner had 23-7. This was the game, I think, when Vic had just come back, right? This
was his first game. Oh, you're right. It was his very first game.
So, man. Turner took a ton of shots. Turner took 22 shots. I would guess the most he's ever taken in a game, to be honest. But
Adam, I believed you on that number that time, and I know you're right.
What? On the.
On the Vic returning
there. Yes, that is his first game back. I remember this game. Thank you for believing me this time.
I believe you that time. I know you're like right.
Four times of getting stats right. Yeah, he took a ton of shots that game. So that was why he had a lot of points. But I don't know. I feel he was 4-6 from three. Like he'll probably have Lopez on him a lot of times, which is a huge plus for him. So I unless they go really small and then he'll have Giannis on him, I guess. Maybe.
Well, they can just mix and match so much that it's hard to predict.
Yeah, I mean, it's either going to be Giannis or will they put Milton on him, I guess? They go really small and go like George Hill, Brogdon, Bledsoe, Giannis, and Milton. Did they do that a lot?
Nah, Giannis at center they do sometimes.
Yeah, right. They do a little bit of it. But yeah, I'll throw that Milton shot 0 of 7 from 3 in the last game of 4 of 18. I mean, that's partially why they won.
Yeah.
The Bucks as a whole shot 11 of 43 from 3. Wow, that's a lot of 3-point shots taken.
Yeah.
The Pacers took a total of 30. Oh, okay. They kept up a little bit. But yeah, do you think this is a low scoring game?
No.
You think it's high scoring? You think it's in the 110?
110, 108 or something like that.
So you think it's close?
Yeah. The Bucks are the best team in the league.
I was thinking, you don't think the Bucks blow them out?
Oh, no, no, no.
That's what I was going for.
I see what you're saying.
I was thinking a 110, 100 both Bucks
teams win. They play against each other have been pretty widespread games.
Okay, but remember, Victor Oladipo played in those games.
That is accurate.
Thank you for believing that stat.
That is all I'll say about that. Victor Oladipo played in the loss against the Hornets, and he did not play, and they just smoked the Hornets. So.
Yeah, but the Hornets are not a good. The Hornets are a whole nother team.
I need to have a point. No, Vic didn't play against the Lakers. Damn it. Either time. Dang, I got nothing.
I got nothing for you on that one. I think they lose by 10, if I'm being honest. I hope it's closer than that. The Bucks are good. They're just a really good NBA team. And the only way that I guess they could hope for is that Giannis and Middleton are kind of sleeping their way to the All-Star break and looking forward to spending time. Where's the game this year in Charlotte?
Yep.
Looking to, I don't know, have a nice week off, whatever, and players are packing up in the Pacers. The one thing the Pacers won't do is they won't just lay down a game. Like they're not just like somebody to overlook a game most of the time, except for that Cavs game. Except for that effing Cavs game earlier in the year. But besides that, most of them, they don't overlook games. So that's their best hope. Maybe the Bucks are like thinking, oh, I have a nice little Cancun vacation plan. Like Eric Bledsoe, I could see him having one of those kind of games.
Yeah.
So anything else you got? I guess we did go an hour despite there only being one game this week to cover.
No, but you just said the week off for the team. I think we should lay out what's going to happen here.
Yeah, so Wednesday we'll have a Bucks preview. Tony will do that one.
Yep.
I will be here on Thursday with a Bucks breakdown of the game, and I don't know.
A little more. Who knows?
We'll see what else was going on, what else I want to vent about. And then we will do a mailbag next week, and we might do even like a three-part mailbag if we get enough questions. I know last year we got enough to do two at least. I think we went 2 hours last year on mailbag stuff. But, yeah, so that means starting right now, you can tweet questions at Locked On Pacers, at FreedomAdam5, at TeastNBA. Just send your questions. We will screenshot them. You can put them in our DMs. You can tweet at our feed. You can email us. You can find our emails on our Twitter feeds. I mean, I don't. How else can they communicate with you, Tony?
Twitter is the way to go.
Yeah, Twitter is the way to go. So just send in your questions. We'll compile them. We'll get, I mean, we in the past have done every single question we've gotten. So we will, I mean, if I guess if we got 50, we wouldn't be able to do every single one, but we'll probably do every single one because we probably will get around 15 to 20 is usually what we get. So we get more of them, it'd be awesome. I know we're up there at like, what, 800 followers, give or take now. So we are slowly growing as a podcast.
Yep, I agree. We are. We've had a crazy start to this month. We can't thank you guys enough for that.
Yeah. So obviously there are new listeners out there who are helping us expand this podcast. So we appreciate you guys as much as the old guys as well. All of you guys are the reason we keep doing this, because we keep seeing the numbers go up and it makes it worth it and kind of fun to do. So that's any question you got. I mean, Tony will likely answer anything about free agency in the summer. He'll hate it and he'll grit his teeth through it and he'll complain to me about it, but we'll answer free agency questions and we'll answer fit questions with players and, you know, playoff expectations and coaching questions. I mean, everything, just throw everything at us. This is kind of the point of All-Star break. So that kind of be our next week. And then we'll figure out the end of next week based on the game Friday. The Pelicans are Friday.
Yep.
So we'll figure out based on that game. And so we'll probably have about 8 podcasts over the next 2 weeks, and then we'll get back into the 5-day-a-week thing, or yep. 5 podcasts a week.
Yep.
Yeah. Did I explain that well, Tony?
That was perfect. 4-4, and then back to 5.
Yeah. So we understand it's All-Star break. Unfortunately, there are no Pacer players in it.
They're doing nothing.
Last year, we had Sabonis and Turner in the Rising Star game, or just Sabonis.
Sabonis and Rising Stars, Vic Dunk Contest, Vic All-Star game.
Like, so we talked about that a little bit.
It's stuff to care about.
Although Vic scored 2 points in the All-Star game, right?
Yeah, he played like 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Played more than Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler didn't make it this year because he tanked an entire team season. Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you have questions, I guess All-Star weekend questions you want to send us, I mean, we'll try to answer those. Everything got. What are you writing about this week?
Ooh. I mean, I'll probably overanalyze the crap out of Wes Matthews' first 2 games.
All right. That's fair.
I'm writing to something cool about Edmund Sumner. And then I don't know. I might do some like evaluating the team at the All-Star break kind of thing.
See, the disappointing part about Matthews, and this is my last point, is that,
oh boy,
if Vic was healthy, he'd be the perfect player. You could dump Tyreek essentially. And you'd be 10 deep and it would be like this team. Matthews just like is such a, like I said it before, but you can tell he played with a smart NBA coach, was well coached, and like he just made some really nice passes that I just was just impressed by. I mean, I know he didn't shoot great, but he just was making plays, and that's what was so impressive. He's like just a good NBA player. I mean, he's just a good NBA player to have.
Okay.
I mean, do you not agree with that?
You said Holiday, right?
No, I said Matthews is.
Oh, yeah, he's a great NBA player. Sorry, I toned out for a second.
Well, okay. Well, and on that note, Tony's going to go, I don't know, 7:15, so he's probably going to go to bed or recap The Bachelor with his girlfriend.
Shave first, but then, yeah.
He's going to shave, maybe talk with his girlfriend about The Bachelor for 45 minutes and gossip about that, because that's what he's into now, apparently. He's talking about this podcast.
Wow.
Just shots firing left and right. Wow. I am going to upload this podcast and see if let's do it tomorrow on Tuesday. That's all we got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll be back, guys, tomorrow on Wednesday. Listen to that one. Have a great rest of your day.